Welcome to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. Hello to you, the listener. Thanks for tuning in. I'm Gail Seiler, your host for today. There's a lot going on in Ames this weekend. The homecoming football game at Ames High takes place this evening, and ISU has a home game tomorrow on Saturday. Also this weekend is Maximum Ames with many live music performances. So later in the show, we'll have an interview with one of those musicians who is performing in Max Ames. And in the last half of the show, Ames Progressive Alliance will be here for their monthly segment. And today the topic will be walkability and bikeability in Ames. So stay tuned for that. But first, it's Friday, and so it's time for our weekly news roundup. Dennis Hart is here to keep us informed.
Gail, there's been a lot going on, so let's get right into it. On Tuesday, the big story in the Ames Tribune was that a local doctor has announced he is planning to run for Congress. Ames physician John Passion is going to bring his health care experience into the race for Iowa's 4th Congressional District, in which he will join three other Democrats who want to take on Representative Steve King next year. He's going to join Sioux City paralegal J.D. Scholten, Spencer City Councilwoman Leanne Jacobson, and Webster City transit worker Paul Dahl in the contest for the Democratic nomination. Passion has been exploring a run since late July and plans to officially announce it on October 3rd. He says, "I'm going to be able to bring something into the healthcare debate. I have experience in healthcare. I know about the situation. I think we need people in Congress who are able to know what it's like to actually be the people who are delivering the care. I think that's the biggest thing I can bring to the table." Passion is a pediatrician at McFarland Clinic in Ames. Also Tuesday in the Tribune, word that a gas leak temporarily shut down the Ames Community School District's facilities building on Monday afternoon. It was evacuated after a sewer pipe let a gas odor into the building. Nobody was at any health risk, and none of the school's operations were affected or delayed because of the leak. It was more of an inconvenience. Also on Tuesday, a picture from Monday night's homecoming parade for Ames High School on Main Street. Hundreds of spectators, including me, lined the streets to watch the Ames High football team and other students marching in preparation for tonight's homecoming football game. A big crowd pleaser took place when the Ames High football team, many of the players, passed out candy to the small children who were lining the streets. That was indeed a big hit. Tonight's homecoming game is against Lincoln High of Council Bluffs. It's at Ames High, starting right around 7 o'clock. On Wednesday, the big story in the Tribune, Michael Moon, a 17-year veteran of Iowa's 2nd Judicial District and a frequent arbiter of cases in Story County, going to retire from the bench at the end of the month. Moon says he's retiring because of state law that mandates judicial retirement at the age of 72, and he doesn't have any interest in working part-time as a senior judge. Moon graduated from Drake University's law school back in 1974 after graduating from the University of Iowa and serving in the U.S. Army for 6 years. He practiced law privately in Marshalltown upon graduation and served as a magistrate in the county from 1993 to 2000. Good luck to you, Michael Moon, retiring after 17 years on the bench at Iowa's 2nd Judicial District. Also Wednesday, word on Tuesday night's Ames City Council meeting, where the council took one of its first steps toward formulating a complete streets plan for the city by listening to an introductory presentation from an urban design firm. The council contracted with Tool Design Group last month, and one of its senior members, Thomas Huber, outlined the different facets of Ames' future complete streets plan. The plan would establish a process for designing Ames roads to be more inclusive and safe for transportation methods other than cars, bicycles and pedestrians, for example. Some Ames community groups, including the Ames Bike Coalition, the Bicycle Coalition, had asked the city to begin working on such a plan, and Huber said that around 70% of Americans think they have no choice but to drive as much as they do. Some roads in the United States don't provide other viable options, whether those are bike lanes or added sidewalks, but Ames, he says, is not in bad shape. City staff and Tool Design will start seeking public input on the future plan within the next month, hosting public meetings and establishing a community advisory committee made up of area stakeholders from within Ames and Iowa State University. They'll also work on drafting Ames' complete streets policy and later present it to the council. Could come up for a final vote, could, don't hold me to this one, sometime next year, perhaps in August. Also in Wednesday's Tribune, word about The Story County Board of Supervisors meeting on Tuesday, where the supervisors unanimously approved the first consideration of rezoning property northeast of Ames. The board also approved the subdivision of the property at 2272 Dayton Parkway to include more homes, going against the recommendation of its Planning and Zoning Commission. The commission was concerned that the proposed use of the property did not align with the surrounding properties. The public also had concerns with trees being cut down, equipment noise, and storage on the property. In fact, several members of the public also opposed the resolutions in person at Tuesday's meeting. The rezoning ordinance will return to the board for its second consideration October 3rd. The subdivision resolution only needed one passage, and it got it. Also Wednesday, good news for an Ames High School teacher. He has been named a finalist for the State Presidential Awards for Excellence in Science. Mike Todd has taught science at Ames High for 12 years. Now, the Presidential Awards for Excellence in Math and Science Teaching are the nation's highest honors for kindergarten through 12th grade educators of math and science, and more than 4,700 teachers from each of the 50 states and four U.S. jurisdictions have been recognized since Congress created the program back in 1983. Now, the awards are administered by the National Science Foundation on behalf of the White House Office of Science and Technology Policy. And award recipients receive a paid trip for two to Washington, D.C. to attend recognition events and pursue professional development opportunities, a $10,000 award from the National Science Foundation, and a certificate signed by the President of the United States. Congratulations, Mike Todd, and good luck as you compete with this. Also Wednesday, good news for 13 Ames High School students. They have been named as semifinalists in the National Merit Scholarship Program. They were among 16,000 semifinalists whose names were announced on September 12th, and they will compete for 7,500 scholarships worth $32 million. A semifinalist must have an outstanding academic record throughout high school, be endorsed and recommended by a high school official, and write an essay and earn SAT scores that confirm the student's earlier performance on the qualifying test. Congratulations. Also, speaking of college tests, ACT scores have been released for the Ames High School class of 2017. 214 Ames students took the test with an average composite score of 25.2 out of a perfect 36. This average is 3 points above the state average and 4 points better than national average. Good news for Ames High School all the way around. Congratulations. Big story Thursday. Yesterday in the Tribune, and justifiably so, the eastbound Interstate 35 exit ramp to US 30 has been closed for construction. That's a big story. It is going to remain closed until at least early November as work on the interchange continues. The Department of Transportation is advising motorists wanting to travel east on US 30 from northbound I-35 to exit at the westbound US 30 off-ramp, travel west and exit at Dayton Avenue, then turn south onto South Dayton, and travel south to the eastbound US 30 on-ramp heading east. I'm going to repeat that. I know that was a little confusing, so you can get out a pencil and paper. I'll repeat it in about 1 minute. On average, the interchange sees a daily traffic flow of 32,500 vehicles. In the past 10 years, the area has had a total of 277 crashes with one fatal accident. That's why they're fixing it. State DOT officials say the project to replace the current loop ramps with a flyover bridge ramp will help alleviate northbound I-35 merging-related crashes. We hope so. All right, here you go. One more time. If you're going northbound from now until November on 35 and you want to go east on 30, can't do it. That eastbound off-ramp is closed. You have to go westbound. Take the westbound US 30 off-ramp to Dayton Avenue, south on Dayton, to the eastbound US 30 on-ramp, heading east. Good luck. Also on Thursday, the Ames Planning and Zoning Commission voted unanimously to recommend that the City Council approve a development plan for an apartment building in South Ames. The proposed 12-unit building would be built at 2151 Cottonwood Road in the Village Park subdivision. The City Council will hold a public hearing for that development on October 10th. The ground floor units on the proposed building would each have exterior entrances, while the second floor apartments would be accessed through stairs inside the complex. If approved and built, the 12-unit building would join a collection of 8-unit apartments scheduled to be constructed directly to the south on Aurora Avenue. Also on Thursday, a reminder that the Mayor's Downtown Healthiest State Walk is going to take place October 4th. I've taken part in this. It's a good one. Ames residents are welcome to join Mayor Ann Campbell and members of the City Council at the 7th Annual Mayor's Downtown Healthiest State Walk at noon on Wednesday, October 4th at City Hall, 515 Clark Avenue. Participants should gather on the plaza in front of the building. Businesses, organizations, downtown workers, and others invited to join members of the City Council for a quick walk down 6th Street, south on Douglas, west on Main, then north on Clark. That's an easier route than that off-ramp thing I was talking about on I-35. It's going to be at noon on October 4th. Join us. It's a fun walk. In today's Ames Tribune, what you will see on the front page when you get your edition today in the mail, the big story is the candidate filing deadline for this November's Ames City election was yesterday, and it turns out the race for mayor and for the Ward 3 City Council seat will be contested. In the race for mayor, architect John Hala is going to face off against former City Council member Victoria Zopinski. Current Mayor Ann Campbell is not seeking re-election. In the race for the Ward 3 Council seat, Iowa State Police Department member Rob Bauer is going to run against business software consultant David Martin. Current Ward 3 council member Peter Arazum is not running for re-election. Two other council members, Gloria Betcher and Amber Corrieri, unopposed. One more story on today's front page. A local used car dealership is going to move into the former Butch's Automotive location at Duff and Lincoln Way, a very prominent location. Ames Cars going to use the location as an added room for its inventory. The owners say they're going to tear down the gas station canopy, pour new concrete, and renovate the existing building inside and out. A lot of people have been wondering what's been going to happen to that spot. Briefly taking a look now at some outlying newspaper stories from this week. Talk about every vote counting. This is the Boone News Republican. Every vote counts in an election. It was the luck of the draw that allowed Chelsea Badgley to keep her seat on the Madrid School Board. That's right. After last week's election, incumbent Badgley and challenger Kurt Mathewson were tied, each getting 175 votes. So last Friday, their names were placed into a hat, and the chairman of the election canvassing board pulled Badgley's names out, meaning she won. She won it because her name was pulled out of a hat. Things were less dramatic in Boone and Ogden. That's right. Official numbers after last Friday's canvass had incumbent Brian Melhouse and newcomer Jeremy Pritchard as the winners in the Boone School Board race, and the Ogden Community School District kept its two uncontested incumbents. Every vote counts, folks. Don't let anybody tell you they don't. In the Nevada Journal, Monday's meeting of the Colonesco School Board opened with public comments centered around the bond issue that failed to gain approval in last week's school board election. All those who spoke appeared to agree that communication between the school and the community needs to get a whole lot better. Board President Joel Niemeyer thanked all who spoke, saying, "Your comments are well taken. We've been hearing them all week." Roland, story. This is in the Story City Herald. Roland Story High School. Good news. They rank among the state's top 10 for sports, academics, and fine arts in its class. The ranking, part of the Bank Iowa Traveling Challenge Cup. It's a statewide competition designed to recognize Iowa high school students for academic excellence and outstanding achievement during state competitions. Good for you, Roland Story. Another story in the Story City Herald this week. Story City ranks as one of Iowa's safest cities. Iowa ranks in the top 20 states in terms of safety, low crime rate, low property crime rate. And Story City ranks in the top 20 safest cities in Iowa. Those making the rankings, a group called SafeWise, which ranks cities and states on the basis of safety. One more story from the Story City Herald of note. In spite of major street repairs, construction of a new swimming pool, renovation of both North and South Park, Story City's tax rate remains low compared to some other nearby areas. Story City's tax levy is currently $10.44 per thousand of property valuation. Nevada, Slater, Colo, Zering, Collins, Huxley, Roland, Gilbert all have higher rates. One more note for everybody. The 47th Annual Octagon Art Festival, you bet, going to take over downtown Ames this coming Sunday starting at 10 o'clock. About 100 artists are going to fill Main Street with a variety of art creations of all kinds. There will be live bands, there will be performing artists, food of all types. The Octagon Arts Festival, organized by, of course, the Octagon Center for the Arts, located on Douglas, between 4th and 5th Streets. One more note, KHOI Radio. We are going to have a table on Douglas between 4th and 5th, right across from the Octagon Arts Center. So come on by and learn a bit more about some of your favorite radio people and favorite radio station. We will be there all day with a table, and I'll be there from noon to 2 o'clock, Gail, and I hope to see you there, too.
I will be. I'll be one of the folks at that table for a little bit of the day.
That's the news for the week.
Thanks very much, Dennis. I think folks are starting to get accustomed to and look forward to your news roundup, and they can hear it every Friday on Local Talk.
But will they get accustomed to my face, as the old song goes? I don't know.
I don't know about that.
Yes.
That was the weekly news roundup with Dennis Hart. Dennis told you about the Octagon Arts Festival going on Sunday, but in addition, this weekend, we have Maximum Ames going on, which is very exciting for music lovers. Evan Taylor, our engineer, is very involved in the music scene here and involved in Maximum Ames, and he has an interview for us with one of the performers for that event. Evan, I'm going to turn it over to you.
Thank you so much, Gail. Now, last week I had a chance to sit down and have an interview with one of the headliners of the Maximum Ames Music Festival, Diane Cluck, who is going to be playing here at KHOI in a concert from 5:30 to 8 this evening. During the selection that you're about to hear, we talked a little bit about her love for the small cities, just like Ames, that are part of her tour that she's currently on, as well as her definition of her genre of music, which she calls intuitive folk. So, without further ado, here is that interview. I'm Evan Taylor, and I'm here talking with Diane Cluck, who is going to be performing on the Friday of Maximum Ames right here at the KHOI Community Radio Station. Diane, how are you doing today?
I am doing just fine. I'm packing up for tour, so this is a little moment between tasking for the day.
Right, yeah, definitely. Looks like you have been touring quite a bit recently, all over the U.S., but then also not too long ago in Europe, even.
Yeah, this year I really wanted to focus on touring in the U.S. It's something I've been meaning to do for years, and I have toured mostly the West Coast and East Coast, as musicians generally do, but I wanted to branch out this year and play more in the Southeast where I live, and also go into the Midwest.
Yeah, definitely. I've noticed that you actually are based out of Charlottesville, Virginia right now. Where else are you going to be stopping through during that part of your tour, that leg?
Well, I'm going to drive up into Pittsburgh to start with, just kind of due north of Charlottesville.
Sure.
And then I'll be in Vermilion, Ohio, and Troy, just north of Detroit, Michigan City, Chicago, Madison, Minneapolis. Then Ames and Iowa City, down to Paducah, Kentucky, Cincinnati, Ohio, Youngstown, Ohio, Rock Island, Illinois, and finishing up in West Virginia.
Wow, that sounds like a pretty ambitious tour, kind of going a lot through the Rust Belt and the upper Midwest, so to speak.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to all the shows, and especially the shows in the smaller cities, or the not even quite cities, a couple of those, like Vermilion, sort of a smaller tour stop, and then Paducah, Kentucky. Those I'm particularly interested in.
Of course, yeah. There's definitely a different atmosphere, I think, in smaller cities as opposed to larger cities. And, you know, it looks like you got your music career, at least your public performance career, started in New York City, so one of the bigger ones in the U.S.,
yeah.
But you're looking forward to the smaller ones. Is there just something about the vibe in those small places that you like, or?
I love live music. I love to play music, and I also, it's my favorite way of taking in music, so I love to go out and hear live music. And the feedback that you get when you travel is that bands and musicians don't stop in these smaller towns and smaller cities. So it's really special to play for audiences where there's not maybe 10 things to do in town that night, or in the case of New York, like thousands of different things to do that night, or maybe there's just a couple spots in town where you can even go hear music. And I just find that it's great to connect culturally with those kind of out-of-the-way spots, and to just kind of see it as my work as a folk musician to bring the music to as many different places as I can in my home country.
Yeah, I totally get that. It's kind of one of those things where, with Ames in particular, we kind of get passed over a lot for Des Moines. So anytime somebody with like a lot of talent who's a lot of fun to see stops through in town, it's always a really special sort of thing. So it's really cool that you're doing that.
I'm really looking forward to the festival. I'm just really excited about it. Yeah. I'm hoping I can see some other shows while I'm there. I was familiar with David Dondero's music, who's going to be playing with me, but I wasn't familiar with Galen Lee's music, and she's amazing, and I'm hoping that maybe I can catch her set.
Yeah, I hope you're able to as well. A couple of other things that I was kind of wondering about. I was wondering if you could tell me a little bit about the singing workshop that you recently conducted in Asheville. Everything that I could see on your webpage made it sound like that was a really fun experience, really interesting one as well.
Yeah, that was great. It was a challenge presented to me by a good friend. Her name is Isabel Castelvi. She's a cellist based in Asheville currently, who accompanied me for about 2 years. We played well over 100 shows together in our travels overseas and in the U.S. And at the time, we were both based in New York. And Isabel was, we were going to be playing a house concert together in Asheville. And she said, why don't you give a workshop when you're down here? The idea had occurred to me, but it wasn't something I was planning to be moving on. But with this idea given to me by a friend and the encouragement, I just decided that I'd give it a try. And it was pretty humble. It was in the house, and we had 12 people come. And I gave some thought to the topic that I most wanted to share about. And singing has been such a healing art for me and such a lifelong healing journey. And I really would love to be able to connect people with their own gifts around singing. I do believe that everyone can sing. And you know, I could even extend this to people maybe who potentially can't even use their voice. There are still ways of singing. It could be breath. It could be percussive. But so many people have had some kind of, you could say, early childhood wounding around singing, where maybe somebody makes fun of the way they sound or just tells them they don't have a good voice or you know, in some way shuts them down with an opinion about their singing. But I find that people love to sing, and they love to sing together, and just to provide an encouraging environment where people can reconnect with their own abilities and strengthen those, so that hopefully, you know, just getting in touch with that when I leave town, they can maybe feel more empowered to start a song amongst a group of friends, or start some kind of chorus or choir or singing group. Just feels so good to sing together. And I've managed to do 5 more workshops since the one in Asheville in March. And I have a couple coming up on this tour, one in Pittsburgh and one in Chicago.
Right. So have you already done the ones that were in L.A., New York City, and Baltimore, I think?
Yeah.
Oh, great.
Earlier this year.
Yeah, it's really cool that you're taking that that approach to singing, because it really is a transformative practice that can really align itself with self-care and self-love. I mean, you know, thinking about even like singing in the shower or something, it's really hard to
exactly.
It's really hard to feel bad about your day after you had a chance to belt something out in the morning.
Right.
You know?
Yeah, and it's not about doing it right. That there's an idea about singing lessons being about learning to sing correctly, which there is some technical aspect that people can pursue if they want to. But just at the most basic level, just getting people comfortable with expressing themselves through their own voice. There's no wrong way to do it.
I had a chance to listen to a little bit of your music off of the internet, and even play a song or two in on my radio show. But I was wondering if you could describe your songwriting style and your playing style a little bit more. I know that you call it intuitive folk, but what does that mean to you?
I felt compelled to have a genre name because it's often asked for.
All right.
In one sense. And the two that popped up most frequently for me were folk music and anti-folk music. And in terms of folk music, I wasn't raised with a traditional folk music background. I don't know a lot of the old songs, and I don't have the learning that I have a great respect for with the musicians who come from those, you know, kind of traditional folk pathways. I don't have that kind of knowledge. So I wanted in some way to distinguish from that kind of folk music. Anti-folk is a scene in New York that I came up in as a songwriter, but I don't particularly care for the word and what it suggests. It basically, the word was coined by Latch, who founded the downtown scene around a particular open mic at Sidewalk Cafe. And he came up with that word because he used to play in the West Village, where Bob Dylan and Joan Baez had played in the 60s, but that was 20 years before, and he'd go and play his new music there, and the people that were going to the folk clubs in the West Village would say, this isn't folk. Like, you know, Bob Dylan, Joan Baez, that's folk. And Latch said, well, if this is folk, then I'm anti-folk. So he went to the East Village and started the open mic in the early or the mid-80s.
Okay.
And around 2000, I started going to his open mic. So everyone that kind of was around that scene was called anti-folk. And to me, the main, this is getting really off topic, I guess, because we're talking about what is intuitive folk. But the glue for me with anti-folk was that it was about heart over chops. Like, you could get up there and blow someone away with this guitar solo, and no one really cared. It wasn't the currency that scene was based on. It was more about, are you saying something true? Are you giving a piece of yourself authentically from your heart? It doesn't matter if you can't play more than one chord on the guitar. That's the group of folks that I came up with. But intuitive folk, for me, is about song structures that just kind of arise almost like a sculpture coming out of clay. It's not based on necessarily A-B-A-B form, you know, with typical like choruses and bridges and things like this. But it's based on just going within and letting things come out and hopefully not judging what you tap into. It's a meditative process. And it felt that those words describes what music, writing music, feels like for me.
Thank you again so much for your time today, Diane. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Evan.
Now let's take a listen to one of Diane Kluck's songs. This one is called Sarah.
Broad spirit comes back along the way, comes to me red black with a lot to say. She sit my tail down, pulled a wishbone wide, she reamed my head out along the way. Even cry.
that was Sarah by Diane Clock. She'll be playing tonight at KHOI during a set that goes from 5:30 to 8 o'clock, and she'll be joined by David Dondero, Megan K. Blair. And then on Saturday, we also have Joe and Vicky Price performing at the station from 4:30 to 6. Then later that evening from 8 to 10:30, we have Lawrence-based hip-hop trio Ebony Tusks, joined by Ibu, Cocordian, St. Lennox, and KHOI's own DJ Viv. Then finally on Sunday, from 12 to 2:30, we have the Flavor Basket Songbook Release Party, followed at 4 p.m. to 6 p.m. by Witchtit, Morning Sex and the Goodweed, Wally Neal, Satchel Bruna, and Free the Snakes. So tons of Maximum Ames events taking part right here at the station, and a lot all over town. I've counted no fewer than 20 concerts that are going to be associated with the event, and it's sure to be excellent. Now back to Gail and the Ames Progressive Alliance.
Thanks, Evan, for that interview and for the info on what's going to be happening at KHOI as part of Max Ames and at other sites. I must say, we all chuckled at some of the names of those bands, so people should come out and see what they are going to do. I'd like to welcome now several members of Ames Progressive Alliance. We have Ann Kinzel and Carolyn Myers along here with Betty Baird, who've been preparing a really interesting segment for us on walkability and rideability in Ames. So I'm going to let them introduce the other guests that they have with you, and let's start this conversation.
Good morning, everybody. So Carolyn, lead us off.
Yes, good morning. Today our guests are Elizabeth Wenzel and Steve Libby from the Ames Bicycle Coalition and Bronwyn Beatty Hansen, who is a member of our Ames City Council. Welcome to all of you. First, I'd like to talk to Elizabeth. Tell me more about the Ames Bicycle Coalition. How did you get involved? When did it form? And what are the goals of the Ames Bicycle Coalition?
I've been a member for about 3 years of the Ames Bicycle Coalition. I started attending just because I ride a bicycle. I love cycling. I haven't owned a car since 2006, and it's my primary mode of transportation. The full background of the Ames Bicycle Coalition, I'll let Steve talk a little bit more about that, but it's primarily the focus is to support cycling as a mode of transportation. But we're also very actively involved with the city council and the city planners to work on infrastructure to make this happen in a better way.
Great. Now, I know you're part of the Ames Bicycle Coalition, but you're actually here to talk about some of the walkability issues in Ames. So tell me more about your involvement with that.
About 10 months ago, I got an email inviting me to apply to the Iowa Walking College. There is a national walking college that's been in place, I believe, for 3 years. And they are professionals who are invited to take an intensive training course to promote walkability in the United States. So Iowa Healthiest State Initiative decided, well, why not have an Iowa walking college? So that was formed just in this last year. And about 14 of us were selected from all over the state. And I'm probably the only Many of them are public health officials, government officials, city council people, and I'm just citizen.
So what do you think are some of the walkability issues that we have here in Ames?
Well, first of all, I do think that Ames is a walkable community. I love to walk as much as I love to bike. But like with many cities, especially in the immediate downtown area, our sidewalks are old. They're old, they're broken, and they're not complete. So that's one issue. The other issue is that we are a car-centric community. We love our cars. And I think people have just gotten away from the whole thing of walking from, you know, less than 15, 20 minutes. People still hop in their car to get from point A to point B. So it's a culture that, you know, I'd like to see change. I'd like to see more of us walking. And to have all of these walking spaces connected. It's important that people have the option, if they don't drive, to be able to get to work, to play, to prayer, to the library, to wherever they need to be in a safe, comfortable path.
Okay, so Elizabeth, only in America do we go to college to walk.
Right on. I know.
That's just too funny. So it sounds like you're getting your PhD in college walking. So for me, who's just, you know, barely at the elementary school level here, Can you tell me what a complete street is? That sounds like a term of art that I really want to understand.
Complete streets means access for all of us, all modes, to get from here to there, whether you're in a wheelchair, on a bicycle, on your feet, on a skateboard, on your roller skates, that you can get from point A to point B, that we all have access. And so when a city adopts a complete street policy, they, instead of looking at just, okay, here's the highway, here's Lincoln Way, here's Grand Avenue, they look at the big picture to say we need to include access for everyone and not just the automobile.
Thanks. I think I'm getting it. So when does the Ames Bicycle Coalition meet?
We meet monthly, the first Monday of the month in the public library, Ames Public Library, at 7 p.m.
Well, how do we get more people involved with the Ames Bicycle Coalition?
I'm just going to say, y'all come. it is something we'd like to hear more from, hear from more of you. It's a great group. We've got a lot of projects. And if you're at all interested in walking, biking, please join us.
And you can also track it down on Facebook. The Ames Bicycle Coalition Facebook page continually is updated with events that are going on. We don't simply meet once a month. There's lots of stuff going on pretty much all the time.
Well, Steve, you've been involved in ABC for how long?
A few years. I don't remember exactly.
Okay. Looking at your bicycle helmet, you've been bicycling a while, right?
I've been bicycling a while,
Yeah. So Elizabeth told us a little bit about what makes a city accessible for walkers. But could you comment on that, about what it means for people who ride their bicycles as their mode of transportation?
Well, you run into a lot of the same issues, really. Connectivity of networks, routes that actually make sense to get across town or to get from point A to point B without endangering yourself significantly and without creating hazards for others either. There are a lot of shared use paths that are intended for both bikes and pedestrians, and now, of course, increasingly also skateboards and wheelchairs and other ways of getting around. And those are grand. But many of them don't really connect all the way through. You know, if you just take one example, thinking about getting across town along 13th Street east-west, there's a big gap from essentially Car Park sort of on the east side over to Brookridge, Ridgewood, kind of on the west end. There's a big gap right there in 13th that the shared use path doesn't continue through. Yeah, that's just one example. There are many examples of that sort of thing where it's not complete and makes it questionable. Is how am I really going to get from here to there? We often get questions at the events that we go to. I live over in this part of town, but I need to go over to that other part of town. How do I get there? And we sit down with a map with folks and say, you could go this way, you could go that route. There's, some options here. There's a bike lane there, et cetera. You got to figure out ways that work. But you have to sort of piecemeal it together. What we really would benefit from are more consistent networks that get you around in a consistent way. The same thing that you're seeing when you're driving. You don't have to divert over to a gravel road for a quarter mile and then switch back over to a paved road and then go around the other block so that you can get essentially three blocks. It's the same thing with biking.
So you've identified some of the concerns. Tell me how the Ames Bicycle Coalition tries to remedy those or move us forward as a more bike-friendly city.
Right. Well, as Elizabeth said, we work quite a lot with the city, with the transportation engineers there, and also with ISU, and exploring, here's a project that's coming up. Let's look at how we might improve that for both bikers and pedestrians. One example. Maybe about a year and a half ago, I think it was, we were working with ISU on changes that were going to happen around 6th Street and University Boulevard because of the reconstruction of the bridge along 6th. And we said to them, that intersection is used quite heavily by both pedestrians and cyclists going to and from campus. And it's kind of a challenge. It's really a four-way intersection with the bus barn coming out from the west side. But it's usually perceived as a three-way intersection. And getting across the shared use path section of that, there's often conflicts or were often conflicts with pedestrians and bikes and cars. And we suggested one thing, put a lead time in there on the walk signal. So if you walk up to it and you punch the button and wait for that light to change, you get about a 5 to 10 second lead before the light turns green for cars to go across. That allows you to get out ahead of them, make you more visible to motorists, and in many cases get across the intersection, or at least that portion of the intersection where a car is going to go, before the cars get the green light. So you reduce a lot of the conflict potential there. That's just one example of infrastructure. Elizabeth also mentioned culture. Culture is another piece of that, just the way people expect to get around. And that's a little tougher nut in a lot of respects. That takes sort of continual education. We have a big part of our population here that changes up every year. You know, we get a whole influx of students. You know, maybe a quarter of them, maybe even more than a quarter of them, are new to town every year. And so there's a constant challenge of education and re-education when people come back into town to look at, well, how do we really want this community to be? How do we want to behave towards each other? How do we want to move around in our community so that everybody gets where they need to?
Well, that's interesting about the education. One of the things we've seen is that in Des Moines, they've really pumped up their trail network in terms of publicly identifying it and making it a very salient selling point for the city of Des Moines. How do you see that playing in Ames? Do you think our trails are well-identified or well-known in our community, or is there something more we should be doing?
I would say that they're reasonably well-known by people who are using them on a regular basis. But if you're not using them on a regular basis, they're probably not. And for the folks who are just new into town, you know, trying to figure out how do you get from A to B is often difficult. And that's true, actually, even for people who have been in town for quite a while, because they, I think, perhaps have just generally said, well, that's simply not an option. I can't figure out how to get there. Therefore, I don't perceive that as a way to move around, and so they don't practice it. Essentially, is what it comes down to. I mean, you know, I've been riding around town pretty regularly for quite a number of years now, and I'm still learning. It's like, here's a way that works better than the way I usually go. And of course, we're very habitual creatures. We find a route that works and we stick with it, even though it's not always as convenient as it might be. So it's all sort of a constant challenge, even if you practice it regularly. You know, if you bike or walk regularly, it's still a constant challenge to look at, well, you know, how might I make that better? How might I change my routing or my timing on that route to make it a more pleasant experience? And so there are a lot of good pieces of network here. I would say they're not perhaps greatly known. The more common ones are, let's say, 6th Street. You know, that's very heavily used. That one, I think, is pretty commonly known by people. But the Vet Med Trail, which is really quite a nice trail that runs essentially between downtown and Research Park, is probably not as well known.
Well, Steve's laid out some options for us to think about how we could expand our network. And so this morning, we have someone. We have our bicycling city council person, Bronwyn Beattie Hansen. Carolyn,
yes.
Take it away.
Bronwyn, Elizabeth talked a little bit about some of the Complete Streets plan. Tell me about the City Council's role with that Complete Streets plan and some of the policies that the City Council has worked on to improve safety in Ames.
Yes, good question. So the Complete Streets process has been going for a while. I remember when I ran 2 years ago, they had just at council sort of adopted the Complete Streets philosophy and decided to start working towards a plan. And we just recently, this year, finally awarded a contract to Tool, a design group out of Madison, to help us design our Complete Streets plan. So we are in the process of that right now. In fact, our last workshop was a review of what they're doing so far. And next steps to develop that plan will be public input sessions, both this October. They'll have some public input sessions on developing that plan, and then hopefully we'll have it in line to adopt by next summer. And that plan really, the way it works is it's like a toolbox for the city engineers for when they are designing a street, maybe repairing a street. It gives them tools for improving it for different types of users if they're able to. basically, or in ways that work, in ways that make sense. It doesn't necessarily mean we're going to put a bike lane on every single street. And I think, you know, some people might get that impression, but that's not the case. It means that we'll work to improve our networks overall. So, you know, hopefully there's a east-west route for bicyclists, you know, but it doesn't mean every east-west street will get a bike facility. But really, like Elizabeth said, it's meant to improve access for all types of users, too. You know, I think we hear a lot about bicyclists, but we have folks who are walking. We have people who are using walkers or, you know, wheelchairs or other mobility aids, and we have children using little kid bicycles and skateboarders, and they're all types of users, and really a complete street network should accommodate everyone.
So when it comes to new development plans in the city, are there any requirements that developers need to meet for bicycle access and safety, walkability access, etc.?
Yeah, Ames already has requirements in certain areas or where our long-range transportation plan calls for certain facilities. And say, yes, a developer is breaking ground on along one of those routes, then yes, basically, the burden of building any sidewalk, bike, trail facility does fall on the developer in that case. Also, the sidewalks in town that might be in disrepair, the way Ames does it currently is the cost of repairing that facility falls on the homeowner whose property it crosses. For the case of sidewalks, obviously not streets. And I think that has maybe led to some challenges, too, either because people don't know that that's their responsibility as a homeowner, mm-hmm. Or they don't maybe have the finances to properly maintain a sidewalk. So I think we need to do something there. I mean, either a big education campaign about, you know, how it is our responsibility, or maybe some ways to look at how we can better fix our sidewalks, because there are areas of town where they are in disrepair.
Yeah. Well, as a resident of Old Town, I'd say that it's very difficult to understand what the standard is that you're required to, because you can cross an area of a mile and find at least 10 different levels of sidewalk. And so nobody really knows what's acceptable.
Mm-hmm. No, that's true.
What's not. So mm-hmm. that's an interesting issue. I think our time is kind of closing up this morning.
Can I ask one question?
Absolutely.
We have a few more minutes.
Oh, okay. Well, you're the boss, Gail.
Yeah. Thank you. I used to live in Montreal, which was one of the first places to have shared bikes, Bixies they were called, and they were just fantastic. I loved it. One of the reasons I loved it was because you don't have to worry about locking your bike and having it stolen, which is a problem here in Ames. People may not realize it, but there actually is a lot of bike theft here in Ames. And when I moved here a couple of years ago, I did hear that there were, I don't know whether it was the university or someone was looking into a shared bike program here, but then it never happened. So I was wondering what's up with that.
That was a project at ISU that was started as a combination class sort of deal. One was industrial design, I believe, and the other one, I think, was probably urban planning. And they were looking at that issue of, you know, could we develop essentially in-house a bike share? And they did quite a lot on that. They really started out from scratch. You know, how could this work? What the bikes should look like? They're designing the bikes, building the bikes, you know, or at least looking at that. You know, they knew that eventually they would just, you know, develop a bike design and have somebody else do the building of it because you need a lot of bikes. But anyway, they considered that quite a lot. I think that the last I heard anyways, which was maybe a year ago, they were looking more closely at putting that in place in the research park, whereas originally they'd been talking about putting it on campus. I think now they're trying to start it up in the research park area. But I haven't heard anything about it recently, so I'm not sure about the status of it now.
Yeah, that's a great question, Gail. I just came back from Minneapolis last week, and people are biking those city bikes all over the place. You go to Madison, heck, you go to Paris, to London.
We do have – so the Ames Convention and Visitors Bureau does have a program at some of the local hotels where they have free bikes that mm-hmm. hotel guests can check out. And recently the city did – the city itself it has a few of those at City Hall that employees can use to bike around to. So I think on a small scale, we've seen some efforts towards that, and I hope we can see more. Yeah.
Well, that's great. Oh, good. All right. I guess we're going to close for real now, right, Gail? Okay. Well, I want to thank our guests, Elizabeth Wenzel, Steve Libby, from the Ames Bicycle Coalition, getting up so early this morning and joining us, and Bronwyn Beatty Hansen from the Ames City Council. You shared some interesting knowledge, experience, the college for walking. These amazing things. Sounds like there's a lot of enthusiasm building in the community, and we're going to see some movement. No bad pun there. And there are a few upcoming events that the Ames Progressive Alliance wants to talk about. So we have another election coming up. We just had one with the school board. But the Ames Progressive Alliance Hot Cocoa Social and City Council and Mayoral Forum will be on Wednesday, October 18th, from 5 to 8 p.m. at the library. There'll be supervised children's activities for kids age 4 and up, and the Hot Cocoa Social starts at 5:30 and the forum at 6:30. So come and get educated about our candidates in Ames, and then after that, you can vote on November 7th. Please be sure to keep up with APA activities on the Ames Progressive, Alliance Facebook page, Twitter, and the APA website at http://amesprogressivealliance.org. So thanks, everybody, and we'll see you next month.
And you've been listening to Local Talk. I've been your host, Gail Seiler. Thanks to our guests who just wrapped up that conversation on bikeability and walkability. Thanks also to Dennis Hart, who provided a weekly news roundup. And we appreciate Evan Taylor for bringing us the interview with Diane Cluck, who will be performing at Maximum Aids. Local Talk is broadcast on KHOI at 7 a.m., noon, and 7 p.m. on Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. You can also listen to today's Local Talk show and all of our past shows on our website, khoifm.org. Local Talk was engineered by Evan Taylor. Our theme song is Backtrackin' by Al Harris and Tom Richards from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley. KHOI is a community radio station that is driven by volunteers and made possible by donations from individuals, businesses, and organizations in the community. So please support KHOI. Go to our website, khoifm.org, and look for the donate button. Local Talk is also a radio production training workshop as well as a show, which means you can be part of our team of volunteer producers and reporters. If you would like to join the team, contact us at the station. Also remember, you can follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. If you enjoyed the show, tell your friends. Remember, your participation as an audience and supporter is what makes KHOI possible and meaningful. Thank you for listening and see you again on the radio.
Funding for KHOI comes in part from the Octagon Center for the Arts, bringing you the Octagon Art Festival with original artwork, live entertainment, and a variety of food. Information is available at octagonarts.org. That's octagonarts.org.
Funding for KHOI is made possible in part by the Ames Chamber of Commerce. In the heart of Ames, the Ames Main Street Farmers Market brings local food and fun. Located between the 300 and 400 blocks of Main Street, including Tom Evans Plaza, the Farmers Market provides fresh local fruits, veggies, meats, breads, handcrafted goods, live music, and family entertainment every Saturday.